Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everyone and welcome back. This is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks so much again for joining us. It's the first Ruck of 2023. World Cup year is upon us. I'm Will Kelleher and apologies if I sound a bit groggy and full of cold. After one day back at work, I think I need a break again. But never fear, if I'm lethargic, then my two guests will pick up the pace. First, Stuart Barnes. Spent a lifetime at Fly Half doing that, didn't you, Stuart? How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Happy New Year to you and everyone else. I would like to think I spent about 10 years dithering, working out which way to go. But I got somewhere in the end.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know.
And also joining us down the line, and we're not in the studio today, thanks to the train strikes, is Stephen Jones. And we were just talking off air, Steve. Come April, we reckon this is your 40th year as the Sunday Times correspondent. Over the hill, what do we think, Stuart?
Well, look, Murdoch keeps ringing me, Mr. Murdoch rings me about every couple of weeks, said he's still okay, still going. Did a lecture piece last week. He said, give it another five more years, he keeps on saying. Which is all we're ever going to do, but I don't like, not a big thing about anniversaries, mainly because I forgot my most birthday as well, but it's a big number, but I love it well as much as I ever did, and all I ever wanted to do was to work for a newspaper, and I work for the biggest and best.
Well, it's an amazing thing. Steve interviewed me 1,000 years ago when I was playing, and he had an infectious enthusiasm then. And I think he loves the game even more now. And God knows he talks a load of rubbish sometimes, but my God, his passion for the game, fantastic, Jonesy.
Thank you, Barnsley. I remember the interview, or at least remember one of them. It was in Bristol. When I listened to the tape, there was a continual refrain. Could you bring another one of those, please, mate? With Barnsley pointing to the empty bottle.
It was stellar in those days.
Those were the days. But look, rugby's huge now. It's not as orderly as it could have been. It's all every bit as frustrating as it always was. But you know, this year, boys, we've got World Cup, we've got Six Nations, and lots of stuff happening. Hopefully, the administration will finally wake up. So, no prisoners in 2023.
Yeah, perfect. So, Stuart, you and Steve were actually at games over the Christmas and New Year break, where Alex Lowe and I were having some days off and stuff like that. Where did you make it down to, Barnsley?
Well, I'd had New Year's Eve off, but the 24th I was in Exeter. And that was the second game I'd seen the Chiefs in. And I thought it was, they beat Bath 15-10. And I was queuing for the VIP bus to the media parking afterwards. And everyone's saying, what a great game that was. And I thought it was awful. I thought it was a game with the referee blowing whistles. One team kicked to the corner. They went for a driving line out. Occasionally they scored, occasionally they didn't. The other team got a penalty. They did the same. I thought it was the worst of rugby. Yet it's always fascinating, because if you commit to your team, the fans of Exeter, because they won, thought it was great. The Bath fans thought it had been exciting and their team were brilliant. And it was an interesting reminder that there are many ways to look at life and rugby.
Look, very interesting what you say, Stuart. I interviewed Ian Evans last week, and we were talking about lovely rugby and the Welsh heritage. And Yayan said, and I agreed with him, that actually you give loyal fans the choice of a 3-0 win or a 28-26 defeat. They take the win every time. And I guess that's something we don't have to accept, that, you know, boring rugby as journalists. But I just think we sometimes forget the fans went away happy and worried about the level of performance or the greatness of it afterwards.
Well, Steve, they must have been a bit worried at the game you were at. Saracens absolutely demolished them the other day when you were at the Stonex, didn't they?
Yeah, I was talking to Stuart about this, and one thing you have to remember, Will, is that whatever you thought the conditions were like on TV, they were nothing remotely like it. It was like a hurricane. The wind was so capricious that balls would be up in the air and they'd actually move two ways before they came back to the ground. It was lashing with rain, freezing cold, and it was, in its context, it was one of the best bad weather performances I've ever seen. We all thought there would be a lot of mistakes, a lot of bad kicking. Saracens played as if they were playing on a windless day in the Sahara Desert. They were absolutely wonderful. They fitted their game plan completely around the conditions. They put away Exeter Club, which is a great club, not a great side at the moment, but certainly came to compete. And I was actually in awe of it afterwards. And I don't think even the coaches or Owen Farrell, who spoke to us, could believe how well they played.
Yeah, I blame my cold on the one day I did actually do a game over the Christmas and New Year was the Bristol Harlequins game at the Stoop, which was moved from Twickenham. And luckily, I was ensconced in the warm, but that was a lashing old day, that as well, and had the whole Joe Marler situation that people would have read about in the Times. But we'll get into the Premiership in a minute. But just as a marker for your card for today's podcast, we've got loads to get into. We'll take you through the latest from the Premiership, recapping the weekend that was gone and looking forward to the one that's coming. We're going to chat to Saracens of Wales centre Nick Tompkins after, as Steve was saying, his fine club win over Exeter the other day. And we'll delve into a little bit of England chatter with Steve Borthwick, the new England coach. We've got to get used to that, making changes to his coaching setup. And of course, for the first time in 2023, but not the last, we'll name our god, goddess, or maybe a devil of the week. A festive round of Premiership action. They had some really high scoring, big victories for Saracens and Sale, and also a grubby old one, 8-6 Gloucester London Irish. A Bath win in there, which are rare to come by sometimes these days, but they've moved up the table. And I was looking at the table actually, guys, and there's 10 points between bottom Bristol and third place, which is remarkable, really. So a whole load of moving over the next few months. But let's start where you were, Steve. You were very impressed with Saracens and their wet weather win. But yeah, you making that from the telly?
Well, I was glad I wasn't sitting alongside Steve for once in my life. I thought they were magnificent. I could see the conditions were awful. I could see the control. Like Jones, I was thinking that this is one of the best horrible condition rugby I've seen. There was a New Zealand game where they beat the Aussies 43-3, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Yes.
And I was in awe of it. But this one was different. This one was fascinating because Saracens are making a mockery of those who have said now that they're a sort of just a hard, attritional, spirited club. The balance to their game was excellent. And I haven't always been his biggest fan, although he has been my God of the Week once this season. But I was sitting with a friend having a glass of wine and I just said, Jesus Christ, Owen Farrell is doing everything. His kicking for territory, his pressure kicking, his technical try assist, sort of a straightforward one, beautiful missed pass, and then the one sort of reverse pass. He did it all in those conditions. And what I, more than anything else, I noticed that Farrell seemed to be smiling throughout, and it does take me back to the England cricket team and what the management and the captaincy are saying. If you enjoy yourself, it makes it so much different. I think back to Farrell playing for England, and he's been incredibly loyal to Eddie Jones, but it was like 80 minutes of pain and anger that you were just trying to hold. When he plays for Saracen, It's like he's gone to Woodstock and he's having a good time. And different player when he's relaxed, and it makes all the difference. And that, more than anything else, should be something Steve Borthwick should be thinking as he moves towards the Six Nations and the World Cup. Get the players enjoying themselves, take the pressure away, let them go loose.
For our younger listeners, we ought to explain what Woodstock was, or do you think they're all right? You're quite right about Owen Farrell. He was really up for it and uplifted by it all, and actually came into the media conference after, which he doesn't often do, and was charming, loquacious, and really, really, really interesting. And one of the points he made was that they've got a definite next Saracens team coming through now. They've got a couple of good props up front. They've got Theo McFarlane when he's fit again. The team is still quite young. And the veteran wings, McFarlane, Maitland-Lewington, still going well. But it was things like the week before, they'd been cleaned out in the lineout against London Irish. They're playing without Theo McFarlane, who for me is the best young player to emerge in the Premiership. And then they come out and play in howling winds. They think, well, the lineout is so key. I think they won everyone on their own throw, thanks to Jamie George and Nick Ezekwe and Marwa Toji. And I think they won about three or four of Exeter's as well. Now, that is All Black stuff. When something goes bad, by next week, you've fixed it, and they fixed it. So I'm not saying they're a great side yet. I don't think they're as great as the team which won their trophies, but they are getting there, and they are laying down bricks and mortar for the next four or five seasons.
We'll talk loads more about Saracens with Nick Tompkins in a little bit on the podcast, but I'd like to pick up that point you made, Stuart, about Farrell seeming a bit more relaxed and a bit more, with a bit more of a smile on his face. I totally agree, because when he was with the England staff in the autumn, he was so much more noticeably open in his own way. Like, he's never going to be a Carl Sinclair or an Ellis Genge character who's bearing his life and soul, but he was far more relaxed with us in the press when he hasn't been in years gone by, and he just seems comfortable in his skin. I've even noticed that he's now posting stuff about matches on Instagram and all that. So it's a tiny little thing, but you just feel like, I don't know, he's getting to the third act of his career, and he's more comfortable in his own skin for the first time.
I can't think, Will, of any fly half or any rugby player who hasn't improved for being relaxed. But the trouble is, we have so many coaches, and they're telling you, you've got to shift this way, and you've got to make this many tackles, and you've got to hit this many rucks. If you say to them, run the game, be yourself, control it. Rugby is a mental game as much as a physical game. And now that Farrell is being adept mentally, as opposed to trying to just be an out-and-out physical fly half stroke centre, then he's a better player, he's a happier player, he's a different player completely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should move on now to Sale. Absolutely remarkable results. And maybe Leicester, at the end of their sort of emotional tether with all they've gone through in the last few weeks with changing coaches and a bit of uncertainty, but Sale hammered them 40-5. And Sale's pack looked pretty strong from the bits I saw of the game. And another hat tip to the guys up there as well is that they almost had 10,000 people in, which I know has been a struggle this season and ones in previous years. So fair play to everyone to fill that out. That was epic effort. But what about the game itself, guys? I mean, Sale are 10 points behind Surrey, second in the league. They've got a couple of tasty European games to come with Toulouse and Ulster. They're kind of quietly building a really decent season, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely, Will. And, they were still without, they played without who they thought might be their two first choice fly halves. But what I was impressed by was, okay, we knew certain people would be playing well. I think that they must, I'm not even sure whether they will, but I think they must give Manu Tuilagi at least a couple more games before they discard him on his autumn form. But I thought he looked far fitter and quicker. But it was plays that, let me just bring up one person. Simon McIntyre, when he was at Wasps, was noted throughout the Premiership for being one of the worst collapsing tight end props in the sport. And I can remember people, remember Gary Gold when he was coaching Newcastle coming in and berating this Wasp tight end prop. Well, he's changed to loose end prop, and I thought he was absolutely immense in the scrum, with the ball in hand, and certainly anyone with any nous or vision would be looking at him as a England squad player, fringe maybe. I thought he was incredible. And I thought, and again, you know, Luke James, Sam James behind the scrum, they're not household names, but I have never been there without thinking, blimey, here are two guys who are thriving in the modern era, but Stuart, they would have been, they are so skillful and so clever, they could have played in any era, and I absolutely love both of them.
Yeah, they're very understated players, aren't they? And I think that's one of the things about Alex Sanderson. There's no trumpets, there's no great ego, they're just getting on with it. And I felt that they look, they could be the only danger, perhaps, to Saracens, because they have a scrummage that seems intent on dominating and not kidding referees. I'm fed up with collective scrums and nobody knows what's going on. Sale are going for it. So that would be the one thing that I would say about it. Second thing, which is a broader point, is Sale are undoubtedly one of the leading clubs in England in the second round of Europe. They scrummaged very well. Their pack went quite well. But in Toulouse, they got absolutely slaughtered because the Toulouse back play, well, no, the Toulouse attacking play was so good. And I think that's just a reminder how tough it's going to be for English clubs in Europe in the immediate future of this season. Sale are a good team. I enjoy watching them play. But they played Toulouse, and they couldn't live with them. Now it'll be a bit different in Manchester, but it was blood curdling to see what Toulouse did to Sale.
Let's move on, lads. I mentioned that game I was at just after Christmas, the Quinns Bristol one, and it was funny that because after it, Pat Lamb was talking about them moving off the bottom and a big result, and when you're at the bottom, people start chattering, and it's maybe not anything that you're doing wrong, it's just a competitive league. And obviously because then they had a bye week over New Year, then they've ended at bottom again. So it's a funny old league at the moment, isn't it? But Quinns have had a bit of a rubbish couple of weeks, haven't they, with the Joe Marler thing that we can talk a little bit about in that Bristol game where he abused Jake Heenan's mother and then copped a ban. It was 6 weeks, reduced down to 2 with 4 suspended for the rest of the season. But then the following weekend, a few days later, Northampton absolutely took them to the sword, didn't they, with an amazing 46-17 win. So Quinn's struggling, Steve, a little bit. They're still third in the league, but they've had a couple of those results that have gone against them.
Yeah, I think they've had a few players out. They've had Esther Husband is not quite the player he was for them at the moment. Maybe that's something to do with the absence of Marcus Smith. Or maybe that makes it better. Look, the thing is with it, it's you wouldn't be surprised if Quinns came out fighting and won the next one, Will, because, look, it's been a depressing year for the season for the Premiership, losing two clubs, which is horrible. Rumours of other financial problems. But when it comes out to it, on the field, 80% of it is absolutely compelling, really good. And it's nice that the big crowds came out this weekend. And I think Quinns are, I think they'll struggle to reach the top four. But I do think that it's a strong league and almost anyone could beat almost anyone else on the day. Let's put it that way.
Well, on that note, the next round of fixtures this coming weekend are pretty tasty, really. At the top of the table, you've got Harlequins at home to Sale on the Sunday. And you've also on the Friday got Gloucester Surrey. So all the top four playing each other. And actually, that top four all lost over Christmas. So where did you see those ones going, Stuart?
Well,
can I just get in first there, Stuart? Because there are two Saturday games which are relevant for Sunday newspapers, obviously. One is in Newcastle and one is in Exeter. So we'd really like to thank your mate, Mick Lynch, for withdrawing the trains. So we've got to come out in holiday time and go all the way to Northampton or Exeter. As I've chosen Exeter, I'd look forward to you setting off for Geordieland within the next day or two.
Well, Steve, I'm about to say goodbye now and start walking because there's no other way. There's nowhere to get there by foot. It's a pilgrim's progress.
Everyone up at Newcastle celebrating this week because it's a very rare appearance they're going to make on BT Sport. I think it's only the second time they've been on the telly this year.
I know.
Not great, is it?
But I know. No, that's wrong. You're right, Will.
Getting back to that thing about anyone can beat anyone, I'm not so certain. In a Christmas period, the focus changes slightly. I know they're professional, but there's just a little dip. And the Friday night thing, if you look to Newcastle's wins over the years, Friday night at home, it is not a sort of balance of it. That's when they win a lot of games then. And you know, London Irish versus Saracens, it was pretty hard 30 years ago playing a Friday night game. No one liked it, and no one likes it now, and it's an opportunity for talented teams. But I think there's quite a big discrepancy between a top team playing away on a Friday night and a bottom team playing at home on a Friday night. I think it is an opportunity, and I think we should just be careful before we buy into Pat Lamb's, some would say, justification, some would say excuse about anyone could beat anyone.
Okay.
Right, guys. So we'll probably have a chat with Nick Tompkins in a second. But just to get a little run through of where you think things are going to go. I know it's so early, isn't it, to say, but we've got 5 months or so until the end of the season. But as we stand here now, I'm putting you on the spot and I'm saying, who are your playoffs and who's your winner from now? Stuart, you can go first.
Saracens. Saracens, Sale. Harlequins. Gloucester.
It's interesting. I think Gloucester could be there, but they are still lacking something. They still haven't got the Teague hard, Mike Teague attitudes there somehow. And I think they can win it. They are a team that can win any game, but are also vulnerable. So I'd say, with Northampton's recent charge, I see Sale and Saracens and Northampton, the third place is up for grabs, I think, between, say, Quins and Gloucester. But it's going to be a good four, whoever they are.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go so far as to say at the moment that Saracens are. Still think Saracens are slightly underpowered somewhere. I think probably I'm always thinking of the great Will Skelton not being there. But Sale Saracens, if you said no, that's the final. I'd love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be the only possible scenario right now where I could see Saracens not winning it because Sale might just bloody their noses a bit.
Yeah, beat them up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I reckon I'd agree on those two. I'd say that Northampton, although all their attacking stats are remarkably good and up there with Saracens, their defensive ones are desperate, really. And I know they won very well the other day, but they're conceding so many points, so they'd need to shore that up before they can get into the top four, I'd say. And I wouldn't write off Leicester necessarily. They're only a few points back and they've had a bit of disruptive time, so I reckon I'm going to go Saracens, Sale, Gloucester, Leicester. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. It's moving out. Right, so next on the podcast, we're going to chat to Nick Tompkins of Wales and Saracens centre. He's been standing alongside Owen Farrell, so tell us a bit about that and his prospects for the Warren Gatland era Mark II and everything else. So that's up next on the podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds.
Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Lovely to be joined by Nick Tompkins, Saracens and Wales Centre. How are you, Nick?
Very good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. We were just earlier complaining about my man's sleep. We're powering through, aren't we?
We're both full of cold. And so have you not managed to make it through to training today?
No, I had to call up with the cold, and I called up and said I couldn't come. So I'm getting a lot of stick tomorrow from all the boys, honestly.
Especially when they say that you spend your day off coming on our podcast.
I'm going to be in trouble. Oh, wow.
How's things? Great win the other day against Exeter. Does that mean that you guys managed to have a bit of a New Year celebration? What's it like around New Year for rugby players?
Yeah, mate, it's been pretty decent this year. So we had our game against London, which wasn't great. But still, the timing on it was meant that we could all go home to our families for a couple of days. And then we had the New Year's game, which is a great title for us, if it's a home game, and it was. And then got the win, which was really satisfying. And then, yeah, we all did our own thing, went out, saw our families, had a bit of a party and stuff. So yeah, it was brilliant how it worked out, and the game really helped all of us. We needed that after what went on with the Lanarish game. I think we needed a bit of a response.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're not blaming the flu or the cold on the night out, are we?
No,
dispel that rumor straight away.
I didn't go out. I said other lads went out. I just was in bed.
Well played. All right. As he necks another Barocca. So yeah, I mean, the game itself was wet and wild, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We were chatting earlier on our podcast and saying wind was blowing in about three different directions, but you managed it well. What change? I mean, it's kind of obvious, maybe, but what changes for you on the field when it's blowing a hoolie like that?
So. Obviously, the things change. Like, you're obviously not going to be able to run it as much as you can or play really expansively as you can. You can't be as reckless as you want. Also, really, it makes kicking actually a lot harder, because you think if you're kicking into the wind, it's pretty difficult off nine to ask your nine to kick however far and get yourself out of danger. So you actually end up running it a little bit more or doing more contest balls of 10 or other things. So it does change a lot of the game. But for us, we said that it might change that aspect of it, but it can't change the way we play. So we still all need to get back. We still all need to be ready to play, be ready to run, and take the opportunities when we can, which is, that's, I think, where we fell down in other years, especially against, think about the final against Leicester. We fell into a trap where we kind of were happy just to kick, and we kept that same game going back and forth of, kicking off nine, they recovered, they had a carry, then they kicked off nine, and we kind of made a decision, a conscious decision then, that we need to change it up a little bit. We can't just carry on with this same old. We need to change, we need to change the rhythm and attack them in a different way. So from that, we've kind of developed this thing, and even though the weather was it was today, yeah, sorry, the other day, you still saw a lot of boys working back, getting ready like we were going to run. And I think it makes a massive difference in all aspects of the game, especially the kicking game, but also the running as well.
Yeah. It's very noticeable on when you look at the stats, and I know they're not everything, that you have done that with, I think, Elliot Daly and Owen Farrell are right at the top of the offloading charts with Ben Earl. I think it's four out of the top six in the Prem of offloads are all Saris players. So has that been something that Owen particularly has driven over the summer and into the season, that you need that plan B and a different way of attacking?
Yeah, I think you have to say that Owen's been the main catalyst for that. I mean, obviously the brilliant coaches that we've had, and we were kind of coming up with a plan, but when he came in, he just brought this attitude where he'd obviously had a thought and looked back at the last season, and we just thought, right, well, we need to change this, or we need to be better, and we need to start, we're just accepting things at the moment. We need to really start attacking teams and kind of and just mold ourselves and make ourselves into something different, and not just be happy with the same old Saris kind of thing. And so he brought this stuff in, he brought this attack in, in terms of he brought the detail in it and how we want how it looks and how we want to do it in training and stuff. And everyone's bought into it. And I suppose it's, I don't really look at any of the stats, but it, I suppose it's all through. And I mean, look at the way we're going. So,
yeah, absolutely. Talk to me about Owen. I mean, he, it seems from us watching from the outside that he had that little injury about this time last year and then another one, the other ankle went, didn't he? And he spent that time, it seems, working on his own game and has come back and added levels. I mean, he's, it's not as if he didn't have them before, but he's, he looks like he's really enjoying himself, and that, that pass out the back was a demonstrative thing, wasn't it? And smiling and laughing, and he's even posting on Instagram a bit more. Like, what's happened to him?
Unheard of. Look, he's had, I mean, last year was a really tough time for him, just the injuries. I mean, one of the injuries, I think I stepped on him in training and did his other ankle.
Oh, no, it's your fault.
Yeah, I know, terrible. It is, well, I know. Horrendous, but...
Is that your Welsh side coming out and just saying explanations coming up?
He's had, like, so much pressure and so much game time where he's in the whole time and he's on and then he's had these injuries. So it's, it must have been really tough for him. And it has been tough, actually, I think, coming back the last couple of weeks because we're all pretty banged up as a team. We've all got niggles and stuff. But I know he can struggle sometimes with his ankles because they're pretty rough at the moment. And he's like, we don't really get that much time to rehab and stuff. So you just get on with it. And I know he's been struggling, like, getting on with it and powering through that. So I think it was important for all of us to get that kind of game against Exeter where it was the feeling of it felt so good. And you saw, like, it just lifts everyone up so much more when you get that kind of output in training and in game. Everyone feels so much lighter and better. And I think, especially for Owen, who has a lot on his shoulders, who's leading so much, you want to show him and you want to, like, you want to perform for him and train for him and make sure, you know, he gets as much out of it as you do. So, but that shows, I think, just shows how he felt about what the hell the team's at the moment, especially after that game. So it's looking good. We had to have a couple of honest words with ourselves. And even though it was only one loss against London Irish, but we had to have a conversation where we've been coasting through training a little bit and we've been coasting through it a little bit. So we needed that conversation, and I think it's been a good thing because, well, look at the response, but hopefully it continues. So I think it's going to be a good thing, but it's,
So when you're standing at 12 outside Owen, everyone tells us about how much of a coach he is on and off the field, but tactically, what's it like when, is it just so much easier? Do you have that clarity of where you need to be all the time? Is he barking at you all the time, or is it, what's it like? Is he calm?
Yeah, it's a combination of, I think it's a combination of all of it, barking at me, tactician, telling me if I say something. I usually come out with something pretty stupid and he laughs at me and tells me to shut up. So that's quite fun. I think for me as a 12, obviously the tactician, obviously that side's going to be amazing. His motivation is pretty special, right? Like when you're lined up, you're getting ready and you've got these guys in front of you, he's like, let's go get him. And he's pointing around, he's like, let's go. And he's like, the way he brings me along with him, like, it just gets you up. And like, to have that, you don't have that usually as a 10 who wants to go out and battle people or really go for him, which is like, it makes you want to be like, yeah, like, I want to get on side. So it's, it gives you so much confidence in that area, which I think is unique because there's a lot of 10s I've played on the leaving 10s. That do run the game just like as well, and they're fantastic and stuff. But there's not many that I've met who have that kind of fight, hunger, and that side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your own game as well? I mean, you seem to have settled nicely into that role at 12. Where you take the ball to the line a bit off the first phase. That's the old Brad Barrett line, wasn't it? With in the early days, are you enjoying yourself as the ball running 12?
Yeah, I love it. Like I love every aspect of that, taking it to the line, giving it out the back, giving it to the tip, or carrying it myself. I can't think of anything better for me because it just get like, that's why I love doing it. I want to get in the game and I get to do it off first page. So I hopefully get to do it a fair bit. I've struggled these past couple of weeks. I think I've been a bit off it. My body's been a bit sore and stuff. There's some things I'm carrying through, but it's been good to kind of look at that and think what I need to do. But I've loved every second of that. And I also, I want to get better at it. And then I look at, there's some players out there that I look at who are really good at it. Dingwall is fantastic at it for Northampton. So is Hutchinson as well. Rory Hutchinson, they're both very good at that, taking it to the line, pulling it out. So I think I love that aspect of that game a lot, and just trying to get as best I can at it.
It's a funny opposition, isn't it, 12? I mean, it's one where when we have to play our fantasy rugby and pick teams of the year or teams of the season or something like that, it's always a weird one of what sort of 12 do you want? Is it a sort of playmaking? We know it obviously plays a bit of 12 for England, doesn't he? And 10 for you guys. But then you've got your sort of Manu Tuilagi types or your Andre Esterhazens, and then you guys and Dingwall and Hutchinson, you mentioned, not big lads, but they're dynamic and they're playmakers. It's a weird position, isn't it? It's sort of all things to all people, inside centre.
Yeah, I think, exactly. I think you can have whatever you want and whatever suits you, your flavour and stuff. But what you do need to have is, and if you're going to have a centre punch, you need someone who's going to be able to carry, someone 13 or 12 who's going to have to carry, and also at least one of you is going to have to be able to be a good game manager in terms of organising the forwards and calling stuff out the back. I'm very fortunate. I played with Elliot Daly and Lazowski and Duncan, but Elliot Daly and Loza are both fantastic at it. Elliot, especially out the back, calling stuff is like phenomenal. But then you look at the England, who've got your Manu Tuilagi. I don't know, I've never played, but he's going to be the unbelievable ball carrier. Now, I just think at 12, you need that kind of, you probably organizer and guy who's going to pull the strings and stuff. And if you're going to play Faz at 10. So it is an interesting one because you can have him. I like it now because it used to be back in the day. I remember it was always like 12 was a big guy, or you always had like massive centers. The 13 was a winger who was really, really quick. But I like it. All these different variations now, where it just makes it so much more interesting how you're going to play the game and, you know, how it varies and stuff. You've got all these great lads coming through who aren't massive, but who are elusive and more excited to watch, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned a few of those guys that you're playing with who are having great seasons, but they weren't, at least the last time England were picking teams in the team, like Elliot Daly. Lazowski hasn't been in for a few years, has he? Ben Earl. Would you be surprised if they're not in the conversation, at least, for when Steve Borthwick picks his first in a couple of weeks?
No question. Like, I'd be shocked. It's not even in the question. I mean, the way they're both playing, Ben and Elliot especially, like, mate, they're on fire. Like, Elliot has been on fire for a fair while of the season now. And some of the stuff he does is brilliant. I mean, but then Ben Earl, like, it's crazy. I don't want to put too behind the sex moments were pretty, like, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but like the way he's been playing has been a proper talent to this team. And he's been outstanding. I can't say more about them both, how well they've been. So I can't imagine they're not in the conversation at all. But you know, these things happen. Opinions, people want to play a different way, and you can't have it all your way. But they're definitely going to be in the conversation. And if not, it'd be crazy, wouldn't it? But
yeah,
that's why I'm not a selector.
Yeah, well, with your Wales hat on as well, you'd probably prefer it on both sides if they weren't in England squad, because they play.
Oh yeah, keep them out. I'd tell them that to their face.
Yeah. Where are you on all that? Because obviously there's been a change with Wales as well, with Wayne Pivac leaving and Warren Gatton coming. And I know that Wayne was a guy that gave you your first cap and all the others after it. So do you feel a little bit of, I don't know, do the players feel a bit sorry for him that it ended badly for him at the end of last year?
Yeah, I think, well, 100% all the players will feel sorry for him, because I think we'll feel like we've let him down, you know, this has happened and it's partly our fault. So I definitely think that. I mean, Wayne was a great guy, a really nice bloke. And like, I'm forever grateful for everything he did for me. He gave me my first chance. So, I mean, I'll forever be grateful to him and everything he's done. And he's brilliant for me. So I'll always say that to him. And I think later down the line, I'll drop him a message and say that I still want to straight away. But in terms of, I don't know anything. I haven't really heard anything. Not expecting to hear anything, but it's exciting, really. I think that's like it's all very unknown. I don't know who they're bringing in. I think there's rumors of people, but Gallen seems like, I mean, the boys that I've spoken to way before about how good he was. So, I mean, it's really exciting to see what he's like and how he operates. Because obviously, I mean, Mem's won that many lines and stuff like that. It's going to be fantastic. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see that. It'll be really good. If I've heard rumors of defense coach of Paul Gustav, maybe. I think, I mean, I know him personally and he was fantastic. Sorry, he's properly good bloke. So he'd be very good if that was the case. But, you know, anyone would be good. So I think with under Gatland.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a funny one, isn't it, for you guys based in England? And I know that there's going to be a hell of a lot of change in Welsh rugby over the next few years. But can you just explain like how difficult it is when you are picked, when you're flitting in and out? And I know that certainly Wayne would look towards the Welsh-based player if there was a 50-50. I mean, there's been a couple of times where guys like Callum Sheedy haven't made squads and stuff because of the fact they can't train a lot. Is that just quite tough when you're having to flit in and out?
Yeah, I find it really frustrating because I think it's more to do with politics than it actually is to do with the common sense and logistics of it. And that really frustrates me because, yes, we might miss maybe a week here and there, or maybe a game outside the window. And that is tough. But I mean, I just think, I think because of the politics, it really hampers the player and it also hampers the team. I'm a massive advocate for players having proper autonomy and being able to play in both leagues. I think if you can't argue how good the product of the Premier League is, and the players that have played there, Josh Adams come back, he was fantastic there, and I was fantastic elsewhere. Liam Williams doing brilliant. Like, I think I personally would love to see the kind of the 60 cap ball and stuff not be there, but like it's not up to me. It's obviously not up to me at all. But you know, I find that kind of stuff really frustrating because you end up really. I'm at a club where I feel happiest and I'm playing my best rugby, and hopefully it translates to Wales. And yet I still get hampered and still get handshelled for it because I'm playing 3 hours away. So I think something needs to change a little bit of it. But I also think, again, we talk about this, Warren Gatland has dealt with this for a long, long time. And I know the boys spoke about how well he does, how good he has relationships with the coaches and stuff like that. So, and I think he's dealt with that for a long, long time. I think he's really good at it. And so it never really happened with Toby Faletau for a while. So I think like if we can get back on track with that and less, no drama, and just, you know, just keep it common sense, I think.
Yeah.
That's the best thing.
Because I don't know the length of your remaining on your contracts and all that, but I suppose for you and someone like Chris Chinzer and Dafydd Jenkins, young guys at Exeter, Reece Sammet's going to happen at some point, isn't it? At the moment, your next deal, if you don't sign it in Wales, then that's your international career over, which seems to be a bit of a waste of loads of talent that's over the bridge.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's not. I'm not saying don't play in the Welsh League whatsoever, but you can't deny the talent and the skill and the training and the coaching that goes on at the Premiership, and the fact that these lads are going to be playing in the European Championship and like getting all these experiences and stuff. And I think both avenues should be open. And like you said, these boys are now going to be put in a difficult situation. I don't know what they've done with their contracts, but they're going to be put in a difficult situation. They're going to have to choose either to play for the country or play for the club. And I think it's going to be difficult. And that frustrates me because I feel like there should be both. You know, you should be able to do both. And I think in the end, in the long term, I think Wales would be better for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're turning into 2023, which is a huge year for everyone, isn't it? With all sorts of stuff coming, with titles on the line, World Cup, everything else. So to sign off, I'm going to jump this upon you, your one wish for 2023. Doesn't have to be a New Year's resolution, doesn't have to be a trophy or anything, but what's Nick taking one thing? What did you say, sorry?
Not being ill.
Yeah.
That might be a wish.
On the field, what would you say? What would be the one thing that if you this time next year you think really proud of achieving that?
I mean, how do you get to win the World Cup? Is the question.
Like, easy.
It's easy.
More so than the comeback title win with Ceres?
Well, now you're trying to, you see, now you're trying to put cameras, vision, no, World Cup.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. It'd be nice to, it would also be nice to want to get back to a final with Saris and do the business. That would be pretty awesome. Maybe, you know, yeah, maybe one day try and do the double one day with the European and the Prem. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember now, the times that you made the bench for one of the European Cup wins, did you?
Yeah. I was always in, always kind of in and around it. I've been on the bench for, what was it, the championship final, maybe one or two of them.
Okay.
Got on for one of them, then in the Prem. So I can't really play them. That's what I'm
reckoning. Okay.
I'd be nice to start, but.
Yeah, perfect. All right. Well, there you go. World Cup winners, Wales. That'd be a hell of a thing, wouldn't it?
Don't quote me of saying Nick Tompkins expects Wales to win the World Cup. I feel like that's going to be there.
No. Don't worry.
Don't wish.
Well, really appreciate all your time, Nick, and hope you get better soon. We're both snivelling, so we'll next time we meet, we'll be full of beans and everything else. But
thank you, pal.
Best of wishes and everything else for the new year and Gloucester on Friday night and everything else.
Appreciate you, mate. Thank you.
Right, great there to hear from Nick Tompkins. They've got Gloucester on Friday night. Should be at Belter for Saracens. But up next, let's chat a bit about England. Steve Borthwick, the England coach, has been busy changing up his coaching team, guys. Out Matt Proudfoot. He's now a consultant for a university team, the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa. Some decent wine down there. Barnsley, right?
Very good, yes.
Also out, Brett Hodgson, who... everyone who listens to the pod will know I like my stats. And the one for him was he lasted just 56 days in his position, which was 12 more than Liz Truss, and 18 more than Kwasi Kwarteng. So, Steve, he's probably one of the great England defence coaches, you'd say. What an impact in 56 days.
Yes, exactly. I thought he did really well. The way he drove into the training headquarters in a nice car and drove out again was excellent. I think, well, this whole thing is a massive black mark, yet another for Eddie Jones. He came in and he said, not only will we be doing this, and this, none of which happened, but also he said, I will be bringing forward another generation of England coaches. Not only did he not do that, but the three coaches who were left in the end have had to be paid off because none of them were any good. And that's the legacy. So Steve Borthwick, possibly without enormous finances because of these payoffs, is struggling. Now, Matthew Proudfoot, as we said the other week, he was coach in New Zealand. He was coach of South Africa during the last World Cup. He was forwards coach. He must have spoken to Beast Matawa era every day for 4 years or more. And yet in the piece autobiography, he does not get one mention. So that, to me, means he's not England class. And these people are the detritus left behind by hopeless Eddie.
Well, the last one to have departed was Danny Kerry, who was the women's GB hockey coach who took them to the gold medal in the 2016 Olympics. And actually, as our colleague Owen Slot wrote around the Eddie saga in November, he was a guy that wanted to leave 6 weeks after he joined. So he has actually gone now. He was a training consultant. And actually what they'd be left with now, it's funny, isn't it, when the context changes and everything else. They've got an entirely English backroom team now with Richard Cockerell, Martin Gleeson, Kevin Sinfield. And if you count Richard Hill, who's the kind of team manager guy, who might be a bit more hands-on in the new era. Is that important, Stuart, that it's a sort of best of English against the best of everyone else?
No, I don't think it's important. You don't have to be English, but you have to be really committed and part of the setup. Do that, that's absolutely fine. We didn't want Eddie Jones out because he was Australian. We thought he should go because he wasn't doing the adequate job. And there's no xenophobia. Nothing. No one cares about that. They've got to be the best people. Whether they've got them, I don't know. What I would say is, I would have really liked a fresh attacking coach, someone to challenge Steve Borthwick. As it is, Martin Gleeson is sort of probably relieved that he's still in the post. But before I sort of hammer away too much at him, it can't have been easy for any of the assistant coaches in the last year or so, because you never felt there was a sense of real independence in doing what they wanted to do. And problem is, you now are in a situation where you can't get to the end of the Six Nations and say, right, we're going to change. The change came at the very in time in terms of at the top, but now this is what England are left with. And Steve Borthwick, I don't think it's the hand he would have preferred to have dealt to him, but he's got to make the best of it.
Yeah. On that note, you just mentioned about not having the agency to do what you like. There was some chatter, or just talked to people over the last few weeks, and it seemed that Martin Gleeson is actually quite popular among the players, but just was never given the rope at all. And he'd come up with a few ideas for the attack and present them to the squad and Eddie and everything else, and by the afternoon they'd all been binned. So
God.
I do feel sorry, as you were saying, for some of these assistants. And yeah, let's hope that it's, if this is the team to take them forward, that it's steady for a number of years and whatever else, because the revolving door, as Eddie's advisor doesn't like us saying, which was accurate, has been revolving for far too long. But right.
Well, one other thing there, very briefly. Also, you know, Danny Carey, a training coordinator. It takes me back, and I keep bringing back this reference to cricket because it's significant. Brendan McCullen said he got rid of a lot of just people in the background in the changing room. And Danny Carey, so far in the background, apart from his Olympic achievements, I don't know what he was doing or did with rugby, but it's another voice. It's another person. I don't know what you think, Steve. It's just another bit of clutter, and clarity is what players want.
Totally agree. When you see these teams on the touchline now, arm in arm, as they face the national anthem, there's about only 50 of them. Absolutely ridiculous.
Right, so there's a meet-up. So the players that are coming to, there's two meetings. There was one in Liverpool yesterday, so we're recording this on Tuesday, and today there's one in Gloucester for a few England players. There's no official squad being picked, so don't stand by your Twitter accounts or your papers waiting for that. But there's just a few gatherings, so these players will meet some of these coaches. But then there'll be a full squad. Steve Borthwick's full Six Nations squad will be later in the month. And I'm going to get both of you guys to do just one in and out. So from the guys who are in Eddie Jones's last squad and whoever's around the Premiership, because the floor is open now, isn't it? There's plenty of people who can come back into it. So, Steve, should we start with you? One pick to add to this squad and maybe one to get rid of?
Yes, I'll just do it all in one sentence with a couple of commas, Will. First of all, I think it's a magnificent prospect that the team will be picked on merit, also with what they say to Steve Borthwick in private. Merit selections, people who play out of their skins have got a chance of going there. In terms of who I wouldn't pick, I think Johnny May is struggling for form. So the people I would pick is the people are the sort of new generation of wingers coming through, and the person I'd leave out Johnny May, and I would bring in as soon as he's fit Rafi Quirk, because I don't think that Paul Fleet, who was got a really bad deal playing in that awful Eddie Jones team, I don't think he's ready, or perhaps possibly just below the standard. So I think they need Rafi Quirk to come through, possibly Aris Mitchell. So I go Quirk in as soon as he's fit, and Johnny May out.
Okay, Stuart, where are you going with yours?
I want intelligence as well as edge. Elliot Daly, I know he took a bang at the weekend, but Daly's been magnificent.
Yeah.
He can start if you want. He can cover the bench if that's what Borthwick wants. He gives the team so much flexibility. I'd start him, but even if you don't want him in the first 15, there's that flexibility. Out. Nothing against him as a player. I think Ollie Chesham is a fine player, but he's one of these blokes who's he's a pretty good second row, and he's a good back row. England have got people like Tom Pearson coming through to push a back row that is loaded with talent already. We don't need versatility at the moment in terms of second rows and back rows. What we need is a couple of second rows who are big monsters in the Launchbury, George Cruz style, who will counterweight Maro Itoje, who's not quite as big. So, you know, I think Daly comes in, Chessum goes out, but only because he's a very good rugby player, but you've got so much in the back row and he doesn't give you what you need in the second row.
Yeah, okay. I think mine, possibly harsh on Alex Coles, who was one of Eddie's more recent picks, came in, did okay, didn't disgrace himself, but I feel like in that vein you're just talking about, Barnsley, yeah, let's have the best back row on the field. So Ben Earl, bring him in, and Alex Coles can drop out for the Six Nations and see how he goes for Northampton. And but you're going to have Ben Earl at 12, though, aren't you, Barnsley?
I am, yes, because Steve Borthwick is going to, you know, he's going to come back from Woodstock and he's going to see the rightness of trying. But Ben Earl, a couple of weeks ago, he played so beautifully standing at 12. He's got such pace. He's got great hands. There is nothing wrong with thinking outside the box. Hey, and if it doesn't work, well, so be it. You could put Dan Kelly in the squad and see what's going on there. You could have a look at Manu Tuilagi. But we haven't sorted out this 12 issue for a long time. So, you know, what the hell's wrong looking at him? And if Farrell's going to be the 10, then the Ben Earl situation, knowing what his mate does and Elliot Daly, makes eminent sense.
Well, I think that's a great, very interesting from Stuart. I've been thinking maybe someone along the same lines, and I just think they could give Dan Cole a go at fullback.
I thought, it's a good thought, Steve. I like it.
He's not the fastest, but he's got something about him.
Like it.
Well, I think that the Ben Earl at 12 thing would be a hell of an experiment. He's only got five proper tests to go through, hasn't he, Borthwick, before they get into the warm-ups? But fascinating. We'll see what he does. That's the proper squad's going to come much later in the month, so we'll cover that off as soon as it gets there. But coming up next, I think what we'll have to do is name our God, Goddess, or Devil of the Week. So let's get into that next. First time for 2023, God or Goddess of the Week. Steve, do you want to lead us off?
Yes, I will. First of all, Happy New Year to everybody, all our lovely readers, listeners, readers. How can you read the ruck? All our listeners. I usually try and find someone slightly less left field, but today, no. Owen Farrell, it would be an insult if he wasn't chosen, not only for his performance on the field, but because of his excellent words off the field, where he did look like he was enjoying himself. And so Owen Farrell is my God of the Week, and I think it won't be the last time we pick him on the ruck.
Perfect. Stuart, where are you going for yours?
Well, I'm just going to repeat a phrase Steve just used. Excellent words off the field. It's not Owen Farrell, it's Sia Khaleesi, the Springbok captain, who will be leaving the Sharks and South Africa after the next World Cup to play for Racing 92. And in this era of ego-driven individualism, it was wonderful to hear him speak in his press release. He said, "I've always maintained that I am not a self-made man, and that is because I've been so fortunate to have benefited from the immense contribution of so many people in my life. There is someone with integrity and decency, and what a time to say that." So Sia Khaleesi, World Cup winning Springbok captain, he's my God of the Week.
Good work.
On that note, actually, he wasn't going to be my God of the Week, which I'll get to in a sec, but I better mention Kyle Sinclair, who over the... just a couple of weeks before Christmas, I did a big piece with him where he went down and gifted an opportunity to a young boy in Croydon, whose family had been struggling a little bit, but he's a very talented rugby player, Old Whitgiftians Juniors. He's in the Quinns Academy. It was a remarkable evening. It was brutally cold. It was -3, I think, with snow on the ground on a Friday night. And Sinclair drove all the way from Bristol, surprised the lads, a load of 15 and 14-year-olds, did a Q&A. And then after it, brought his mum and the lad Tyree into a little room and said, look, if you get your grades up, I'm going to give you a tutor, I'm going to help you out with your academics, and I can try and get you a place at a public school and advance your rugby career. And it was a remarkable thing for someone of Sinclair stature to do for a young guy. So fair play to him for that. So that was possibly the god of about 2 weeks ago. But the piece hadn't come out by then, so I'll do that now. So well played to Sinclair. But yeah, in terms of this week, I think I mentioned them earlier, but I think I'm just going to give a joint award to everyone who played for Sales forwards against Leicester.
Yep.
They absolutely took them to the cleaners. There was one penalty try, a couple of other maul tries. Simon McIntyre got one as well. Seriously dominant. And a nice way to end their year. And I think it could be a good year for Sale. They might not get all the way through in Europe because they've got one of the best teams to play against in Toulouse. But in the league, they're a coming side. So there you go. Sale Sharks pack, you are a joint gods of the week. That has been our first ruck of the year, the World Cup year. We're going to be doing them all the way through. It's going to be a very busy year, isn't it, lads, with World Cup warm-ups through August, and then a World Cup at the end of it. And by, I don't know, this time next year, we'll have a new World Cup champion and everything else. But for now, thanks so much to Stuart Barnes.
Thank you, Will.
And thanks again to Stephen Jones, turning into year 40 and fresh as anything that he did in 1983 or whatever else.
I'm just going to Gloucester to speak to Mr. Sinfield.
Yeah, there he is. So yeah, stand by if you're on your Times app and everything else and buying the paper, because there'll be a big chat with Kevin Sinfield. He's up with England later today on Tuesday. So Wednesday's paper, there'll be a big chat with him, and he's always good value. So stand by for that. But for now, that has been the Ruck from the Times and the Sunday Times. Please follow, please subscribe, tell your mates, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.